I am speaking with Dan Cardinelli with Communities and Schools, the National Organization of Communities and Schools. He is here in Kalamazoo, meeting with community members and with the Kalamazoo branch of Communities and Schools. Thank you very much for taking some time.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You have written and spoken about children who grow up in poverty or start off at something of a disadvantage and how the school system often does not accommodate them or serve them well. Here in Kalamazoo, we have something, of course, called the Kalamazoo Promise. Does that carrot, which is out there, which says that if you finish high school and your grades are reasonably good and you get into college, it's going to be paid for, does that in some way change the equation?
Oh, I think it's game-changing, actually. So let me say a couple of things. First, I think the way school systems were designed in America, they presumed that most students came to school with a basic middle-class support mechanism. Two-parent family and resources if there were issues around mental health or around food security, all that was taking place at home. And so teachers have been trained and principals trained to really run a school around academic performance. What we find, though, in high-poverty schools is that students come to school with an incredible set of challenges that schools aren't and were never designed to set up. So what Communities and Schools does is partners with schools to be able to mitigate, to remove all of those what we call non-academic barriers and ensure that young people, when they show up, regardless of the zip code they were born into, are ready to learn. What has been so game-changing about the Kalamazoo Promise is the community has come together and said, we believe that our young people, if they're academically successful, should be able to make as free a choice about post-secondary education based on their own desires, about being a citizen and choosing their own careers. And money shouldn't be an example. So that alone is an amazing game-changing environment because young people are coming of age in this system as students, realizing college is a real possibility. Some form of post-secondary is a real possibility. That's huge. So for poor kids whose families would never have may never have gone to college, they're now saying, wow, I can go to college. There are other things about it that are fundamental. One of the things is it basically put pressure on the education system to make sure all young people are ready for post-secondary. And I've seen the school system here do just terrific work to drive increased academic outcomes. So regardless of how challenged a young person is, they're supported to be able to go on to community college or a four-year place or Voc Tech. It's just terrific.
It's part of what you're saying there, though, that there's more than just having the money and the opportunity, that there has got to be some infrastructure around that, both in the community and in the school district, if it's really going to work.
So I am very much saying that. You know, we know that money doesn't solve things. Money is a great enabler. People and caring adults and supports are what are transformative for young people. So the goal of Communities and Schools, and I think the goal of the school system, is to ensure teachers, and in our case at Communities and Schools, our site coordinators that work in schools, are involved in the lives of all young people. And we know that kids that are under siege from poverty have very fragmented lives very often. And when there is a caring adult or a set of caring adults in the building, they can believe that their lives can be transformed. And then they're available to learning. They're available to imagining horizons that they wouldn't otherwise imagine. And most importantly, they're able to confront the obstacles that they have in their lives with resiliency and a hope that will carry them through the difficult breaking down of barriers that all young people have to do. Most of us, I grew up in basically a very strong middle-class environment. I had a family that helped me bust through those barriers, and they had resources to be able to help me do that. The job of the school system and our organization is to provide that community of support for them so that they can bust through and make great choices. So once they've done that, then when they start realizing dreams and they have resources to go on to community college or college, what a fabulous opportunity. It's not an obstacle. The community's already taken care of that obstacle.
Based on the time that you've spent here in Kalamazoo meeting with people in education as well as people in the broader community, the business community, do you think there are some lessons here that Kalamazoo has to teach to other school districts about how to address those problems, even if those other districts don't have generous donors that can create this sort of scholarship program?
It's a great question. So one of the things I think I'm personally wrestling with as I'm here in Kalamazoo and I depart this afternoon is it seems to me Kalamazoo is creating the next iteration of the social contract. You know, 120 years ago, public education wasn't a given in many kids' lives. And then when it became a law in states and then throughout the country, first it was a requirement till you were in the eighth grade. And then as the economy changed and the requirements for young people to be educated, the demands were higher because of industry and the industrialization in this country, we changed the law to 14 and then to 16, and now many, many states are at 18. I think Kalamazoo raises a question, says, shouldn't we also make that almost a requirement, the community's expectations that post-secondary is no longer a negotiable reality. It's something we should require of our young people, because in order to participate in the American economy, in order to realize the American dream of a minimal middle-class existence with a house and a car and being able to raise your family, you're going to need to have post-secondary education. And so Kalamazoo's philanthropic community said, you know what, we're going to create a big experiment here, and we hope the rest of the country learns from it. It'll be good for Kalamazoo, good for the young people here, but it'll raise some great questions for the rest of the country to consider. So I carry that message across our network in the United States and back to Washington with the education reform leaders that I work with.
Is there also, though, a middle ground here in some ways that a lot of people see the four-year college degree as the end point, and yet there are some very good jobs someone can get with a certificate, 2 years of training at a community college. And should those things also be something of a focal point? Because there will be some people who don't have maybe what it quite takes to get to 4 years, but they can still get themselves a pretty good middle-class job, can they not, if they can get to community college and get the sort of training they need, which is still more skill than you're certainly going to have in high school, but maybe not quite what you'd have, or different set of skills anyway that you'd have after 4 years of college?
So I'm going to respond in two fundamental ways. So the short answer to your question is yes. I think that what we know is required for young people is some form of post-secondary. That can be an apprenticeship program and electricians or plumbers, or it can be a PhD or a JD. So the point is that a young person is fully informed about what the options are. And what I mean by that is not just what the careers are, but what it requires to get there. And that they're given the resources from an academic and from a social-emotional perspective to be able to make a choice about what they want to do. And so the way public education has historically been organized is it's sorted kids. So, 50 years ago, the majority of kids finished high school, and they went on to some kind of a job that gave them middle-class existence. In this state, particularly manufacturing, was a terrifically great way to participate in the economy, buy a home, raise a family, and realize a retirement that was really quite dignified. The world has changed fundamentally, and now we know that in order to participate in that kind of in the economy, in American society, you need to have some higher degree beyond a high school diploma. The second part of the answer is this, is that unfortunately the way the system across the country operates, a public education system, is that kids who are poor and kids who are of color are disproportionately in schools where realizing post-secondary education is a very, very thin possibility. And so that's where I think we as a nation need to reflect deeply and begin to say, if we're going to tap the best talent in the country, that means all kids have an equal shot at making good choices about their future. And we, from a systemic point of view, shouldn't make that for them. So our belief at Communities and Schools, and we join a group of national leaders in saying, K-12 should function for all young people well. And at high school graduation, and you here in Kalamazoo are living this, a young person can make an informed choice about whether they want to become an electrician, a doctor, a physicist, a social worker. And then there is a pathway forward from an economic point of view for that young person to realize his or her dream.
Michigan is one of many states right now which are considering some sort of educational reform. Often these involve things like schools of choice, perhaps more charter schools. If someone were to call your office at Communities and Schools and say, Dan Cardinale, we're considering some ideas for school reform, we've got a blank slate, and we'd like to hear some of your thoughts, what would they be?
So that's a great question. It's a loaded question. So I'll answer it a couple of ways. First of all, The vast majority of young people today, there are about 50 million K through 12 students, are in traditional public schools. And for the next 10 years, 15 years, I don't foresee that changing radically. So if you're asking what is the best way, the most comprehensive way to improve the lives of those students, those 50 million students, I would say then traditional public schools are where we should put our time and energy. And so I think that there are three core elements that need to be invested in. The first are, and this isn't priority order, but I'll just label it out there. The first is, I think, teachers. Teachers are like tires on a car. Without them, you can go nowhere. And to the extent that you have extraordinary teachers in the classroom who have incredible capacity to both build relationships with young people and be the academic leaders in the classroom, you have a winning solution. The second thing I think that is necessary are well-led school institutions at the superintendent and principal level. And these are academic leaders that are about transforming the way public education operates so it is even more effective for all kids in that building. The third thing I would say is a set of social-emotional learning strategies. Communities and Schools is a great example of an organization dedicated to delivering those sets of resources so that the whole child flourishes at a school and that not just the head of the child. So anywhere from the minimum things about how to self-regulate and anger, manage your anger, to how do you be a participant in the school life and can run for student government, or you when you're on a field trip, you know how to act and show up on time, to the very sophisticated stuff of really, you know, when you're thinking about self-organizing as a student body and building a prom event, that you do it with ways that are constructive and inclusive and manage the class issues that are happening in your school. So when you have all three elements, great teachers, well-led organization or well-led buildings with principals and superintendents, and organizations like Communities and Schools dedicated to social-emotional learning, you have a winning solution for public education.
You were not in the education field when you were recruited for this job, right?
That is correct.
Do you think there is some value to finding people who have not worked necessarily in education but do have some other skills and some other ideas and might bring a fresh set of eyes? Obviously, not everybody can be that person, but does that bring some value to an organization whose primary mission is education?
So from a personal point of view, I believe it does. I've certainly
have this job.
I have this job, and I've had it for 13 years and certainly enjoyed the work and been transformed personally by it, really, and making community visits like here in Kalamazoo are great examples. I've been in three schools already. I'm going to two more today, and they're just transformative of events. So let me answer your question two ways. One is I hold the teaching profession in incredibly high regard. And I have this image that I travel almost every week. And I often, when I get on an airplane, you can look left and look right. If you look left, you look at the pilot, the cockpit. But I always turn right because I am not a pilot. And I fly sometimes every single day, and I am in no way, shape, or form qualified to get behind the wheel of an airplane and take it off. And I think there is a great reverence we should have for teachers and principals who are deeply steeped in the work because they get behind that plane every day and they take off.
But there are some people who work in the airline industry in administration or whatever who never flew a plane before.
And that's my point. So communities, I'm a community organizer by training. And Communities and Schools is one big community development organization. We are about organizing the tremendous resources in schools, and then we partner with the pilots, the teachers and the principals, and we enable them to be as effective as possible because we remove all of the non-academic barriers that a lot of their students are showing up with. So while I've been schooled by them, I still defer to their wisdom and their smarts because they're the ones who are trained to do this. We should get out of their way.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
Just a big thank you to the community here in Kalamazoo. I travel a lot, as I mentioned earlier, and I have conversations with community members that say the same thing to me wherever I am, which is, this is a unique community. You don't understand. There are a small group of people here that really have a disproportionate impact, and they're the decision makers, and they're really leading this community. And I would say that that is not true about Kalamazoo. One, Kalamazoo is somewhat of a unique community because there aren't just a few people that control the community. I see deep and broad community participation and leadership, and it's quite distinguishing and I think deeply American. So it's been a great visit. Thanks.
Thank you for your time.